Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest today, Tova Martin. She is a perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener and is accredited as an organic land care professional. Tova is the author of many gardening books, horticulture industry veteran, a speaker, and a trainer, and we will be talking to her about indoor gardening and also take your gardening questions as well. Do you have a need or an interest in gardening inside during the winter? Would you like to get some help keeping an outside plant healthy until spring? Join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Tova Martin, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Hey, Larry.
It is good to hear your voice.
I know. I missed you.
Well, we've been missing you, too. You know, let's talk about indoor gardening. What does indoor gardening mean to you? I mean, how would you kind of define it?
That is such a good question, and that leads me into, okay, I'm going to coin a new word as of today. How's that?
Oh,
you
good.
You heard it first here, okay?
Okay.
Home plants rather than house plants. We're going to talk about home plants today.
Home plants,
because, you know, I'm looking around my house right now, my office, every room in my house has plants, and it's not just one token plant sitting by the window, you know, one lonesome plant. I do little gardens. And I make it comfy, cozy, and I design with them. They're part of my family. They're part of my decor. I wouldn't have made it through the pandemic without these buddies.
So they're good for us mentally and probably physically as well.
Yeah, they really are. You know, they're so totally therapeutic. They give us something to take care of. They quench our inner nurturer. And they're beautiful, and they're like pets, really. You know, I kind of go around feeling my plants too. They're very tactile. I grow a lot of grasses, actually. Believe it or not, I grow carrots all sorts of carrots and plants that I could just run my fingers through. And I have to tell you, Einstein, my kitty, loves it.
And Einstein doesn't eat it all?
Einstein actually swats away at the grasses. That's his favorite thing to do. But he's been trained, Larry. If you want to know my secret about...
Yes.
You want to hear my secret?
Yes.
It is the high decibel screams. You know how cats hate that noise.
Yes.
If his mouth goes anywhere near a plant. And I won't demonstrate for you.
Okay. Thank you. Oh my goodness. Well, what are some things we should consider when creating our own indoor oasis?
Well, you know, you've got to think, let's start from the beginning, because it all has to do with light, doesn't it? I mean, nothing will really practically grow without light, to be practical about it. And I know people talk about, growing plants in total darkness, but you can't. They need light. And so the first thing you should really think about, you should assess your light. Just go around and think about where your windows are facing and actually how much practical light they do get, because you might have overhangs and things like that that are cutting off light. So think about that. Start there. And go around, you know, how large are your windows? How much light do they get? When, you know, at the different times of year, winter light is different than summer light. And in winter, fall and winter, the foliage is off the trees, so you get might get a lot more light than you get in summer.
That makes a lot of sense. And I, you know, the stands, I've noticed, I've seen some pictures of your place, and you do a lot of interesting things have a lot of interesting ways to show your plants off.
And get them up to the window, up to the light source, which is, you know, a lot of people think, oh, I don't have a whole lot of plant stands, and I don't really want to go out shopping right now. But I just take, you know, one of my favorite tricks is to turn over like a waste paper basket.
Mm-hmm.
A nice-looking waste paper basket upside down, and that's, voila, you got your plant stand. I just take old suitcases, nice-looking old suitcases, and I stack them up. Up to where I want the light source to be. So that's another little trick that I do. That's another trick. And I also take, you know, little step stools and ladders. And I use the rungs of those to put plants, and that can make a nice little scenario, you know, a little vignette. And I also use just, you know, chairs. Chairs are great plant stands.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, why not? So you probably have all those things in your home as well as furniture. And the only thing I suggest is that you be careful about, use saucers underneath your plants. And sometimes in my larger plants, I even use things like baking sheets, you know, those with, as long as they have little edges, you know, little, you know, enough to hold any
water
that might,
dribble
out.
So that's good. And there's more we can talk about with that, but we've got some callers who want to visit with you, and we'll come back to the this whole business. Pam in Rhinelander has a question, so let's go there. Pam, hi.
Hi there. I brought a lot of container herbs inside, and my living room is almost all glass, but it's only north and west light, and everything is dying, really.
Mm.
Do I need to buy grow lights?
Well, I don't think, no. Pam, do you have them fairly close? Because west is a very good light if you have it close to the panes in winter. I find that west is even better than east. And I understand that north is a little tough, but north and west should be good. So if you could position them as close as you can to the panes, and your problem might not be light. Do you let the plant dry out slightly between waterings, but not bone dry?
They're usually not bone dry.
Okay. About how often do you water?
Just once a week.
You know, try increasing just slightly. It might be a little too dry. That might be the problem. Also try rotating, just rotating the plant itself so it gets balanced light. And I'd say once every 2 weeks should do that, just give it a half turn.
Ah, So that could definitely help, Pam. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Becky and Ryo, on to you now. Hi, Becky.
Hi, it's nice to talk with you. So I have a question about the Christmas cacti. Lots of people have been mentioning for the last month on Facebook that their Christmas cactus has come into bloom very early. My theory is that we had a lot of gloomy days in September, and I think that triggered the plants to bloom early. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Becky, I think you're spot on.
Yeah.
I really do. Don't you, Larry?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It has a lot to do with light levels and that sort of thing. And they might have just sort of thought that it was winter already, because it's more about light. Of course, indoors, they're not affected by temperatures. So it's all about light for the plant. But, you know, it has a lot to do with hybridizing, too, because they've hybridized the Thanksgiving with the Christmas. And so the Christmas, you know, when you buy the plants, they usually bloom a little bit earlier.
I can remember.
I call them holiday cactus.
I had a Christmas cactus in my office at work, and I ignored it a lot. Mm-hmm. And that thing was blooming all the time. It's a wonderful blooms from that. And it would be cooler in the evening, and it would be dark, and then it didn't get a lot of watering from me.
Yeah, yeah.
And that thing bloomed a lot at all different times of the year sometimes.
See, it was just saying, Larry, look at me.
Oh, man. But Becky, I think you're on to something there. Thank you so much. Tona in Red Cliff, we'll go to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello, thanks for having me on. I'm wondering about daffodils. Mine, we got a stretch of really nice weather about a week ago, and mine all started to sprout.
Ooh.
So what should I do? Should I cover them up with some more soil for the winter or what?
No, you know, daffodils are really smart, and I always say that they've got antifreeze in their blood. The foliage doesn't, you know, unless they're really coming up high, but just poking above the ground, you're going to get snow up there. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll get a snow cover, and they'll be just, you know, under their little blanket. They'll be fine.
Yeah, there's not much you can do about it, Tona. I would not recommend covering them up, I don't think.
I don't think so either, Larry. I just think just let nature take its course. They're probably just breaking the soil.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Tova Martin, our guest today, perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener, and always great to have her with us for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Jane Rotunda, our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at indoor gardening today and maybe creating an indoor garden with our guest, Tova Martin. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Great to have you with us. Give a call with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Bill in Deerfield next. Hi, Bill.
Hi there, Larry. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so I've had the same Christmas cactus for 35 years.
Congratulations.
It used to bloom at Christmas, and then it started blooming earlier and earlier and earlier, Thanksgiving, and now it bloomed this year. It bloomed at Halloween.
Oh my goodness.
So I it's blooming beautifully right now. It's fantastic. It's inside now, but I keep it outside all summer, all spring, summer, and fall, bring it in. I think that there may be something about climate change that I don't know. I don't know, but I know this plant is blooming earlier and earlier every year.
Well, it might also have something to do with pot, you know, being pot bound. They love that, actually. They really do love being pot bound, and tightly, in other words, the roots being tightly potted. And as it gets older, it might just want to make sure that you always love it.
I think you've got something going there, Bill. It's good to hear from you, and thank you for letting us know you've had a Christmas cactus for 35 years. That's a long time.
Congratulations.
That's a long time. Kent in Pulaski, your turn. Hi, Kent.
Hey, how you guys doing? Hey, I live in a small apartment now, and I don't have a lot of sunshine, but I do have patio doors, and I got these two, they're almost like trees, and then I got a couple plants, and they're doing good. They're getting now. I put them in actually in a bigger pot and stuff like that. But my question actually was, what would be like the best plant for something like that? I mean, I do get the light. It is facing to the west, like your former caller called, and I do get a lot of sunshine in the afternoon. But I'm always looking for something more. That you might recommend.
So you actually have a room for a tree, is that it?
I got two of them, and I put them in bigger pots, and there's a plant that I had and then I kind of put it in different dirt, and that one keeps coming up no matter where I go. Mm.
What type of trees are they?
I don't know. I bought them from a church rummage sale, and and they I had them over 10 years.
Wow.
And they just get getting bigger. And they lose their leaves like the fall, but they're still green and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That way.
Wow. So they really are trees. They're deciduous trees, sounds like, if they lose their leaves or not. Are they ficus type of things?
Kind of. I know I couldn't put them outside.
Okay.
They will drop some leaves near the fall, but other than that, they're totally green. And I just keep putting them in bigger pots. I said, what would be a good idea?
Yeah. I mean, it is, you can sort of hold the line on graduations. If they start getting too big, just chisel away at some soil and let, and put new soil in that place. Rather than, getting something bigger and bigger and bigger. But as far as the roots are concerned. But you know what? I do all kinds of trees. Not only do I do ficus, which is, a tropical, I even do conifers. I find that Camassiparis, the false cypress, that makes a great house plant. Any type of juniper, I bring those in. They're my little woods inside. You can get Norfolk Island pines. You can get those at for the holidays. And those are little trees that are just lovely little trees. So I do those. And in the tropical realm, you can. I find that what seems to work best, you can get palms pretty much anywhere, and they're just lovely, very easy, very low maintenance plants that just look very lovely. So those are some ideas.
Yeah, there you go, Kent. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Sue in Lake Geneva has something. Let's go there. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I have a plant that has a lot of those little gnats. Looks like fruit flies.
Yeah, fungus gnats.
Yes, and I'm wondering what I can do with those. I can't get rid of them.
Yeah, there's actually, it's actually an environmental thing. And by the way, I know they're unsightly and all that and no fun, but they actually do no harm. They don't, cause any plant trouble, But yeah, you know, I get it that you don't want them around. There are products for it. Try Googling it. I can't remember, but I do know that very recently, in the last year, they've come up with, you know, fungus gnat treatments, you know, products for that. And I haven't tested any of those out yet. But what generally, as far as cultivation goes, which you want to stay away from is you want to stay away from very moist soil. So what you could try doing is putting a layer of pebbles or river, you know, a little river rock on top of your soil, because they like that, you know, kind of damp soil top. That's what they love.
All right. So give that a try, Sue. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Carrie in Burlington, your turn. Hi, Carrie.
Hey there. Yeah, I brought in a gardenia plant and a lime tree. And along with it, even though I transplanted into new soil, treated the soil with bug plugs and spray, I still have gnats in my room where they are in the window.
Yeah, so that, did you listen to Sue's question? Because she had the same situation where I'm suggesting it can have to do with cultivation, that you are, maybe the soil is constantly damp. So one thing you can do is top dress your soil with something like, I suggest like a river stone or even pebbles on the top, so you're not there, you don't have that exposed surface of moist soil. But you know, maybe also let your soil dry out a little bit more between waterings, so it's not constantly moist.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Carrie, good luck. Thank you. Phil in Mount Horeb, your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I'm an inexperienced indoor gardener, and I have a basil plant that I'm picking leaves very slowly off of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to ruin it, but I'd like to raise a lot more basil inside, you know,
yeah,
for a steady stream, and
yeah,
I'm wondering if you can give me some advice on how to do that.
I sure can, because Phil, I'm a fellow addict. I love basil. Love it. And what I do is I actually plant the little seeds of the Genovese basil and keep a succession of them going, so that I'll always have basil to cut. And you know, of course, you know that you just, if you just clip off the very top, they often branch, and you can get a lot of basil that way. They like a lot of light. As much light as you can possibly give them works well. And, you know, rotate them also. But I find that they're so easy to grow from seed that I just get a packet of seed, and every month or so I plant a new little group of basils and, you know, and pop them up, and it's fun.
Do you, with the seed, you don't really cover that seed too deeply, do you?
No, I do cover it, though. They don't need,
yeah,
light to germinate, but I do put just a little, just a, like a quarter of an inch of soil over them at the most, just cover them, and they sprout in like 7 days or so.
Yeah, they sprout pretty quick.
Yeah, it's so much more economically, you know, smart than keeping buying basil.
And yeah, and a pack of seeds.
Yeah, there's nothing like fresh basil. Nothing compares.
Yeah. So there you go. Get a little rotation going, Phil, and you will be in good shape. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, Or you can email us. Kendra in Madison emailed us a photo of her philodendron, and we'll be getting to that in a bit. But you can join in there at 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. There you go. Helen in Menominee Falls. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there. I just want to share a story about mom's plants. She had roomfuls of beautiful, beautiful plants. And then mom had a stroke. And she was away from home for quite a while, and I moved home to take care of her plants. And a strange thing happened. They started wilting down and dying.
Oh.
And I had to share that with mom, and she said, "Well, honey, do you sing to them?"
Oh.
And I thought, "No." "Do you talk to them?" "No. I water and fertilize, or what else?" And she said, "Honey, try singing to them." And you cannot believe how they revived. Many
of
them.
Oh, my goodness.
They just loved it. And it was just that was mom's solution to everything. But try singing to your plants.
That is just the sweetest thing. Wow, what a story, huh,
yeah.
Larry?
Mm. Yeah. And when you're singing to them, you may be running your hands across them a little bit and moving, you know, giving a little motion there. But that is a great, great story, Helen. Sing to your plants.
They do find that plants are affected by sound waves, for sure. But, of course, I have to ask Helen, what exactly do you sing?
Old songs. From Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Oh.
Home Again, Kathleen. I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair. All the old songs that mom taught us when we were kids.
So you're singing mom's songs even to them.
There you go. Yeah. I bet you it's therapeutic for you, too.
It is. And there was one song, Come Little Leaves, Said the Wind One Day. And it was a song. I'm 83 now. I knew that song by heart when I was 2 or 3 years old. But that was mom.
That's wonderful.
And her Christmas cactus was a true Christmas cactus, not the type they sell now.
Yeah, yeah.
And when mom had her stroke, then my older brother got the plant. And he died about 5 years ago. He was 84. And I didn't have room for it. It was just huge. And so we gave it to our financial advisor. He has it in his office. And that plant now is over 90 years old.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
They are long-lived plants. Absolutely. Not all plants have a lifespan like that. Or good stewards like your family.
Yeah. Oh, Helen, thanks so much for sharing your stories.
Wonderful stories.
Yeah, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. Well, let's take another call. Jenny in McFarland, it's your turn. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
What can we do for you today?
I had a question about rhubarb. We recently moved to a new house, and I have an heirloom rhubarb plant that I put into a big pot to move, and it grew and produced rhubarb over the summer in the pot. But now it's dormant, and I'm wondering when is a good time to transplant that into my new garden bed. Should I do it now or in the spring?
That's a good question. I'm thinking spring. What do you think, Larry?
Yeah, you might be able. You're in McFarland, which is in southern Wisconsin. You might be able to get it out there. But if you can wait till spring, it's probably going to be better. Rhubarb's pretty tough.
It is. It really is. And they do sell rhubarb roots. So, you know, that's how you start it. It certainly should be fine in a pot. I'm thinking that if you planted it out now, it might not have enough time to get established.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might be a little bit, you know, and then in that dicey stage when
you know, too much stress going into the winter.
Yeah. So hang on to it for spring, Jenny. And is there much to do with it over winter? There's not a lot, is there?
No, she could just put it in the, you know, let it go dormant, put it in the basement or something like that.
Yeah.
Anywhere except for the, I would keep it cool if I could. And
keep it cool and a little, make sure that it doesn't completely dry out.
Yeah, or too wet.
Yeah, you don't want it too wet. You want it just a little moisture there.
Yeah.
So there you go, Jenny. Thank you so much
for
calling.
Good luck with it.
Tova, did you have a chance to see Kendra's email with her photo?
I did. The philodendron with the leaves that have issues.
Yeah, some they're browning up.
Mm.
Started dropping leaves, getting spots.
Yeah, looks like she's got something fungal going. And Larry, I'm thinking that it might be a case of overwatering. And I'm looking at, but it's hard to tell, you know, because she's got it in the cashpot, which is a woven, just a woven outer container, and it's hard to see what's going on. To me, it looks like it's, you know, maybe not enough light, maybe too much water. It does look like a fungal problem going on there. If I were her, I would take those leaves off and stay with the good new growth that's happening, although it looks like some of the new growth has the issue too. So those are some ideas.
Yeah, there's no tray under it, which means that the water sits in the bottom of the pot. So you need to be careful about how much water you were providing it to.
Yeah.
So that's what we've got for you, Kendra. I'm sorry to see the problem, but maybe get those leaves off and see if we get some new ones coming up. And hopefully it can be resolved. Elizabeth in Platteville, your turn. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good morning. I appreciate your taking my call. I have a Christmas cactus that has gotten very large, larger than what I want. And I don't know where or how to cut it off, at what joints or whatever, where do I cut it? The other thing is it doesn't bloom very much. Last year it had three or four blossoms on it. I think it was three. And, you know, as I said, it's very old. It's over 50 years old, I know.
Wow.
So is it just too old that it's not, doesn't want to bloom anymore?
No, am I figuring this right, Elizabeth? Did it bloom a lot previously?
No.
It never bloomed much.
Well, when my mother-in-law had it, it bloomed some, more so than what it has for me, but not profusely like you'd like it to be.
Okay. Now, you're not being too kind to this cactus, are you? You're not, like, keeping repotting it a lot, are you?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay, no. Because they actually like to be pot-bound a little, you know, quite a bit, actually. They perform better in a smaller pot, you know, than a larger pot. How about soil? Is it kind of root bound in the soil? Have you checked the roots at all?
I repotted it only once, and that was some time ago.
Okay.
I just don't recall how root bound it was. But
okay.
It's been in this same pot, and for the size of the cactus, I don't think the pot is too large.
Oh, okay.
Because of being such a big
okay.
cactus, and it's in a west and little north window, and I don't move it because I've heard that will stop them from blooming if you move it. So
I would
summer,
give it a little bit more. If you got anything that's like brighter, if south would be wonderful. South would be great. and or, you know, just try to maybe move it a little closer to your light source. That, or you could, be sure to rotate it. And if all this fails, and you want to try something totally new, try trying to give it just a little shot of fertilizer. I use fish emulsion, and see what that does for it. Just give it a little shot of fertilizer.
Not too heavy on the... Well, fish emulsion would be good because it's low nitrogen, and you don't want a lot of nitrogen in there.
No. Just give it, you know, just give it a try. Sometimes they need a little bit of a push.
And then for cutting it back?
Oh, for cutting it back. Yeah, Larry, thank you for reminding me. You want to go to where the, you know how Christmas cactus have like segmented leaves? You want to go back to where the segment is, but you could take off like a whole branch if it's getting too wide. You could do that too.
But you just cut at the segments, and you can cut it back
pretty
good if you want to.
You can,
cut it back to the size you want or even a little less. Elizabeth, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Tom in Windsor, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning. Larry, this might be a question for you. A couple months ago, I bought a lime tree and it spent its first month out on the deck, and then it moved inside, and it's underneath a grow light. I have repotted it, but I've been losing a lot of leaves the past couple of weeks. You know, it's easy to pick up a half dozen leaves a day. Well, what am I doing wrong?
Larry's got to introduce limey now. He's got his own... citrus.
Yeah, limey would always lose leaves when she first came back in, and then she'd grow new ones. And I think there's something about newer leaves that come in are a little, they're different leaves.
Mm.
They're leaves that are thicker, I think, a little bit, and they are more attuned to the light conditions and so forth that they have. So I just never worried much about it, and I picked up the leaves, and they started growing new leaves, she did, and there you go.
Well, you know, Larry gave me a great piece of advice from Limey, and that is that he fertilizes Limey a lot. And I actually have a Calamundin orange, and so I started. It had yellowish leaves in the winter, and I started putting on a little fertilizer quite often, actually, once every 1 or 2 weeks, and it is loving it.
Yeah, they like fertilizer, and I just used fish emulsion, but I used it every single time I watered, so I got lots of good luck.
Also, Tom, I find the citrus very, very, very thirsty plants.
Yeah. So there you go. Keep those points in mind, Tom, and you're going to have good success, I'm hoping. Thank you so much for calling. Tova Martin, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest Tova Martin, perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener, and is an accredited organic land care professional. Questions for her is we've focused a bit on indoor gardening. We'll take some other gardening questions too if you have them at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Cecilia emailed us, Tova. She brings in large ferns every fall, but by February they dry up. And she's wondering if you have any suggestions. She does have a humidifier, and she sprites them.
I'm glad you mentioned that spritzing bit because here's my spiel on spritzing. Okay, and I'll say that five times in a row. That it doesn't really help. You'd have to be out there with the spritzer every 15 minutes, 24/7, to make a difference for the humidity. And not only that, it kind of leads to just the foliage being wet all the time, and that can lead to all kinds of problems. That actually might have been the problem with that philodendron that we were looking at. Too much moisture on the leaves. But as far as ferns are concerned, yes, they do like humidity. So humidifier is the easiest way to increase humidity. Cecilia was saying that she brings her large ferns in every fall. I'm not sure exactly what type of fern she's growing. Boston ferns are a challenge. I have trouble with them, and heaven knows I'm a major gardener person, indoor gardener person and outdoors. But I'm thinking just keep the soil lightly moist. Ferns do not like to be dried out at all. So they're a great plant for the nurturers out there. Those not so good of a plant for the neglector type, but the nurturer types are going to love them. Be sure that you have a container large enough for all the roots, because or divide up the fern if not, because again they're going to drink a lot.
Carol in Green Bay emailed that their shamrock plants keep getting white spots on the leaves. They bought a new plant, used a new pot and new dirt, and now the spots are starting up again. Carol's wondering, what the heck is causing this?
White spots on the leaves. Sounds like mildew, doesn't it, Larry?
Yeah.
But I don't usually associate mildew with the shamrock plants, oxalis, and that sort of thing. What about you?
Yeah,
I'm thinking it might be that's the only thing I can think of is mildew, really. As far as spots are concerned, so I guess let's just go with that. You're having some sort of disease issues on your shamrock. So what should you do? I'm thinking, be careful. Don't spritz that foliage. Keep the foliage dry. Water the plant from below. Water it not too heavily, and don't keep the soil moist all the time. Just let it dry out between waterings. That would be the best thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. We've talked about pots quite a bit, and you are somebody who likes pots that kind of fit the decor maybe a little bit of the house. The plastic ones, you're not a big fan of for an indoor houseplant.
I'm not a big fan is putting it mildly, but I'm death on plastic pots. But I'm a big proponent in making an indoor garden, so it's I'm trying to make it all look really beautiful, and this is part of the fun, don't you think, Larry?
Yeah. Attractive pots, it makes such a difference.
It's so much fun to match a good pot with the plant. So, supposing Carol had the those beautiful burgundy colored leaved shamrocks, she could go with a pot.
She could go with a pot that was maybe even black, or she could go with a red pot, or she could go the other way and do maybe a silver pot with it, you know, like a metal pot. You can have so much fun with this and, you know, matching shapes, doing something that is, you know, if say you have a modern house, do something that's very, you know, strong lines, very architectural. Or maybe you have, you know, an antique home. Go with something that looks like maybe an old, you know, something that maybe looks like an old bucket or something like that for a container. You can really match your decor, or terracotta goes really well with a vintage house. You really kind of have fun with it.
Let's take another call. Mary in Park Falls. Hello, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have a Mandeville that I bought, and I put it outside. And this summer, it only grew about 7 or 8 inches. And I had had one prior to that in a pot out on a patio, and it had gone crazy up a trellis. But then I took it in the winter and I put it inside now.
Yeah.
And I have it in a south-facing window, and I do have a trellis. It's going nuts. It's going beautiful inside. But my question is, for next summer now, can I put that, because I wanted it next to my garage, and put it on a trellis, or should I just leave it in the pot? I'm scared it doesn't like the ground.
Should be okay with the ground, Mary, but I got to ask you about the light in it, where you're putting it out. Is it good bright light?
Yeah, right now I have it in a bay window, and then, like I said, I have it on the floor, and there is like a heat register near it. So, and I know Mandevilles are a tropical plant, you know.
Yeah,
I know
they
don't do well in the winter, but boy, this thing is going crazy. I've never seen it. It was so beautiful now, because this summer it did nothing basically outside.
Well, I was wondering, Mary and Larry, did you have a cool summer, or was it a hot summer?
Park Falls?
What did
you have there, Mary? Cool, wasn't it?
Yes, it was cool.
Yeah, they like the heat. They really, really like the heat. What you're experiencing indoors is this plant, you know, just loving that heat. And if you have a good light source, you might even see blossoms. It's rare in the winter that they bloom, but you know it could happen. And if it does, congratulations.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you, Mary. Brenda in Egg Harbor. Hello.
Good morning. There were questions about a Christmas cactus that were not blooming. And it's always been my understanding that they need a dormant phase in autumn. So between like September and October, it's not so much how much light they get, but rather a lack of light. Mm-hmm. And so they need to be totally dark at night. And then when the buds start to appear, and they will, then you can increase their watering and so on. I have 3 Christmas cactus. They are gorgeous and bloom all the time. The one winter they didn't bloom was when I left a lamp in the room for my very, very old cat. And I kept the light on during the night because she was so old, and I just thought she needed it. I did not get one bloom.
Interesting.
Yeah, and
wow,
you know,
thank you for that tip, Brenda.
It reminds me of the one I had in my office, because it was totally dark at night. And I mean just black, so it did not get white at night at all, and it was cool.
Well, it is something I don't think about enough, because you know people have street lamps and all that sort of thing, and it could affect it. Most of us think, you know, okay, we're leaving at night, the light will be out. But if it isn't, it might affect that plant. Good point, Brenda.
Yeah, thank you, Brenda, for
yeah,
calling.
Thank you.
Randy in River Falls, hi.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I had a problem with powder mildew on lilacs this summer. We had a lot of hot nights. Lost a lot of leaves, and then later on in the late summer, early fall, it rebloomed, and we even had flowers come out. And I was just wondering, are these plants going to be okay?
Yeah, they're going to be okay. A lot of people have called the show in recent weeks with the same kind of story. Powdery mildew was really tough this year, and a lot of people had late blooms on their lilac trees. So, Randy, I wouldn't worry about it. I think you're going to be just fine this next year. Let's hope anyway. Tova Martin, our guest today, perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener and an accredited organic land care professional. She's got lots of great information on Facebook and all kinds of every social media you can think of. You're going to find Tova and, of course, her books as well. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Tova Martin, back with us, a perennial heirloom vegetable and cottage gardener, an organic land care professional accredited for that, and an author of many gardening books, a horticulture industry veteran, speaker, trainer. She's on Instagram. She's on Facebook. She's all over the place. So I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments as we move along today at 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. Diana in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Diana.
Hi. Yes, my daughter has been trying to grow grape tomatoes indoors. And this is their first attempt. She and her boyfriend like to eat grape tomatoes. And she says that they're not doing very well. She says they're not growing too well, and they're looking a little droopy. And so I was wondering if you just have any, you know, good overall, I haven't seen them, but good just general advice for first-timers trying to grow tomatoes indoors.
Well, it is tricky. They're a highlight plant for definitely, and even in a very, very, very bright south window, which is what you would need to make this work, or a greenhouse, they would, you know, really need as much, you know, it would be tough for them because it's winter. Or moving into winter. Short day length is not great for tomatoes. Even if she keeps them alive, Larry, do you think she'd ever get a blossom?
Well, it would be difficult. You'd definitely have to have grow lights, I think.
Tomatoes are big plants, and how could you get light all around? But, I mean, those are our best shots, I think, at making this work. She should be rotating it. She should be not, if it's droopy, she might be overwatering. I'm thinking that. Usually, or underwatering, you know, wilt. But probably overwatering if it's droopy rather than looking wilted, right?
Yeah, I've used a pole lamp for limey, so it's got lights at three different places.
Wow!
And then you rotate the plant.
Yeah.
You know, every so often, but I don't know of anybody now. Somebody's going to call right away and say, "Oh yeah, I do it all the time," but I don't know of anybody who's had really good success.
Well, if anybody calls in, keep an ear open, Diana. So because I've never been able to do tomatoes.
Yeah. So there you go. Stay listening. Let's see what others have to say. Roger in Grantsburg, it's your turn. What have you got for us today?
How you doing, Larry?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I was just going to comment there on as far as you're making layouts and plants and planting plants. I used to go out and scrap here, and I was cleaning up the folks' old farm, and I'd find all kinds of old coffee pots that were shot up and dish pans and stuff. And then I found one thing that Mama used here. She planted flowers in old milk cans, and then I had milk strainers. And
good
I never
idea.
Knew there were different milk strainers made in history until I started cleaning up, and I found dozens of them.
Wow.
they look to make just beautiful layouts in the summertime for planting you buy your flats of flowers, and she just set them out just beautiful, and the birds loved them. In the fall, she had a bunch of different fall ones that stayed on. The hummingbirds just loved them. And they look really simple. They look really nice, and when the flowers are done, pull them out, and next year you just plant some more.
Milk strainers.
Roger, that's such a good idea to just use what you've got around, as long as it has drainage, and you can hit.
A strainer would have drainage.
Yeah, a strainer would have lots of good drainage. You might want to put something that needs a lot of drainage in that, like a succulent or something like that in that. But that's such a good idea and a great way to, celebrate your heritage and remind yourself of, the farm you might have come from.
Yeah. Roger, thank you so much. I love that. Thank you. John in Waukesha, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hello. I have two, I think, are sort of oddities as opposed to what plant rules are for indirect sunlight. One of them is a thing I've had for probably 15 years growing in a direct south facing window, so it gets east sun and it gets west sun, afternoon sun all day long. And that is I think they're mother-in-law tongues, or maybe they're a combination of iron plant. They're tall green leaves, some are variegated, some are not, and they've actually bloomed twice, and they get all the sun, and the plant books say that they thrive with indirect sunlight, away from direct sunlight. And the other one is a poinsettia that I got. Oh, I think this is going to be the 3rd December. It sat on my kitchen windowsill, getting the same exposure: east sun morning, afternoon sun, and it has never bloomed again, but it continues to put out reddish green and sometimes totally red leaves. And those things, I guess, are supposed to be chopped off and hidden in a closet for 6 months in the dark and then brought back out. So, they're both growing tremendously. The mother-in-law's tongues or iron plants have actually bloomed twice in the last
Amazing.
10 years, which is rare.
Yeah. Well, John, you brought up a really good point, and that is that when they say something can thrive in low light, like maybe ivies and things like that, they can also take more light. They can also take brighter light, and they might even surprise you with something like the blooms that John is enjoying, which is a total oddity, John. I mean,
yeah,
I've never even heard of a mother-in-law. I don't even know what the flowers look like, to tell you the truth. But you should be very proud, because mother-in-law tongues are now totally in vogue again. Everybody is collecting mother-in-law tongues, and the poinsettia. Ay, 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 wow.
Yeah,
congratulations on that.
John, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Rick and Holman, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Well, good morning, Larry. I have a question. I have a magnolia tree,
yeah,
but I'm not sure it's a tree. Let me start over. My dad's got a magnolia tree, that's probably 40 feet tall, 30 years old. I don't know. I mean, the kids come to have their prom pictures taken there. It's that beautiful in the spring. And I wanted one. So 5-6 years ago, I planted one, which I thought was the same. We got the same place Dad did. And I got 3 stalks out of it. 2 stalks are dying, and one's got, you know, it had some leaves on it. But we haven't had a bud in 6 years that we planted it. We haven't seen a flower.
Larry, they take a while to bloom, usually. I found that. Am I right?
Yes, they do.
They grow pretty fast, though. It's troubling to hear that it isn't growing well.
Yeah.
They're very easy to grow. They're very usually very fast growing trees, and beautiful trees. I find in my soil I've actually lost one in a very damp situation. They don't really like very, very damp. Do you find that too, Larry?
Yeah, that could be an issue, and there, we did get periods where we had a lot of heavy rains.
Mm.
So that might be it, but I'm kind of at a loss without having a look at the plant. It probably something that needs to go to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Some of the leaves or some photos, that close-up photos and so forth, to get a, you know, somebody who can actually take a look at it and tell you what may be going on with it, Rick. I'm kind of at a loss there with that, too.
Yeah, they usually take off like lightning. You know, if you need something, it's something camouflaged fast by a magnolia, you know, planted in front of it.
So that's as good as we can do today, Rick. Thank you for calling. Kel in Sugar Camp, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Kel.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Oh, that guy should try a star magnolia, the white ones. They're much tougher.
Mm.
And because there was a 3-story tall one in Hamden, Connecticut, which is north of New Haven, that I used to go look at in the spring, and it was incredible. 3 stories tall, and it's wide as
the problem with the stellars is they usually bloom earlier, which could be a problem in Wisconsin.
We usually get them in spring.
Do you? And they don't get the buds don't get frosted.
No.
No? Okay.
Well, most of the time they don't anyway. Oh, Kel, did you have a...
Yeah, I was just saying that I've got a couple of really old geraniums. Well, one's a white, one's a brilliant red. They bloom for me all winter in a window. And it's really nice to have flowers, you know. And then I figured out a way to keep Elfin impatient. Blooming all winter. I put them in a vegetable bag so they don't get spider mites, and I don't seal it. It's open at the top. And they don't get spider mites, and they stay humid enough. And they flower their hearts out. And another thing is I can keep fuchsia in hanging baskets. I put them in like a 13 or 30-gallon clear bag, you know, that you use for a recycle. And I leave them open at the top. They just grow their leaves beautifully all winter. I don't get flowers, but they do really well. One of them, mine, is 3 years old. And then I put them out in spring and they flower. But the bags keep the spider mites away, and they also keep them humid. Don't have to water them very often. I mean, some people just say, oh, I don't want anything that's got in a bag. But if you want to keep them through the winter and do really well with them for spring, it works really well.
Yeah, it's a way of being frugal about it. And geraniums, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because they are a lifesaver in the middle of the winter. Those cheerful, colorful flowers are worth, you know, all the all the spring, summer flowers. If you just have one flower in winter, it can get you through. But mine bloom, they bloom and bloom and bloom in the middle of the winter. Happiest little plants. Easy, easy, easy.
Kel, thank you so much. Carol in New Richmond, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Two things. The one lady was talking about a Christmas cactus that wasn't blooming. I use egg water. I don't know if anybody else has ever used that. My mom used to do that all the time. Just put her eggshells in a juice bucket or whatever and keep it. And sometimes after a while it smells pretty bad, but it seems to work really great on my plants. And the other comment or question is, what do you know about an Indian meal moth? Do they have anything to do with plants? I had a friend who had Indian meal moths in her house.
Boy, I don't know on that one. Larry, you want to tackle that one? Indian meal moth. I've never... First of all, I don't usually get moths in, or ever get moths in my house.
I'm afraid maybe somebody's got an idea for you, Carol, but I don't have anything for you right off the top of my head as to why you would be having that particular problem with Indian meal moths.
I don't know much about it, to tell you the truth. I'm looking at a picture here, and I'm thankful I've never seen it.
Sorry, Carol. Oh, man. You know, TK from Green Bay sent in a photo of their 12-year-old tropical plant that delivers a beautiful flower every 4 to 5 years. They're wondering if they can split this and put it in separate pots. They include a photo. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah. I did see the photo, and what they've got is one of the bromeliads, and in the pineapple family, and I love it. She sent us the tag with the picture of it, but there was something here in maybe Dutch. It says something or other verboten, which is propagation prohibited. So there you go. What happens with a lot of the bromeliads is they bloom. The rosette that blooms does not bloom again. So it's kind of like superfluous. It can look very pretty. And a lot of us keep the old rosettes because they look pretty, but they will not send up another blossom. And the plant she sent is a very good looking bromeliad, actually. Mm-hmm. So it's got the silver stripes on the leaves, and it's got beautiful, beautiful foliage. If she wants to, she can. If there's two rosettes there, she can. It's hard to tell from the picture. But if she's got two rosettes, she can take off the old rosette, and again, it will not bloom again, probably, usually. So, whatever she wants to do, but just when you divide them, you want to be sure that the old one has roots. The new one has roots. So if you start, taking away soil and see, oops, no roots on that new pup, then it's going to have to stay with its mom a little longer.
Oh, yep, there we go. Anne from Milwaukee wonders if you have suggestions for overwintering a potted lavender plant inside a house. She's tried it twice, watering carefully but not too much, and by February or so the plant begins to wither and then die. She generally has a green thumb.
I'm with her on that. On the lavender. Lavenders can be a pill. They really can. Lavenders in general are not that easy to host as houseplants. You want to keep them, it's tricky. You want to keep them kind of cool-ish and don't overwater, but a whole lot of light is like critical. So so those are, you know, components that are you know, the critical components, but there are tricky house plants, and I haven't had a whole lot of luck with them. The only one that I have had luck with is one called Goodwin's Creek. It's a certain variety of lavender, and it's the only one that really, you know, performs and blossoms over the winter. And but P.S., it's not really hardy outdoors. So.
Lori and Shano, she couldn't stay online, but has a suggestion for fungus gnats. She says, slice potatoes and put them in your planter, and the gnats lay eggs there, and then you just keep removing the potatoes, and eventually you get rid of the gnats.
I'm going to try that one. Thank you, Lori. Love that. Talk about an inexpensive, safe thing to do. Totally organic. Thank you, Lori.
Oh, man. So, Tova, you are, we should talk a bit about, you're on tovamartin.com.
I am. I'm the author of several books. The most recent one is The Garden in Every Sense and Season by Timber Press. It's The Garden in Every Sense and Season, and I talk about gardening outdoors and inside, too. I also have several books on houseplants. The Indestructible Houseplant is my most recent houseplant book, and The Unexpected Houseplant, and they're full of photos of voluptuous houseplants and taken in my own home, and suggestions for plants that might grow well for everybody, and all kinds of tips and hints. So, and I am on Facebook. I'm on
Instagram, I think.
Instagram. I'm actually, if you've got a garden club, I'm doing virtual lectures. So that's going to be fun. I don't often get to Wisconsin. Really, it's a little bit of a way for me to travel, but you can have me in your living room.
You know what? I'm going to keep that in the back of my mind, because I've had a few times where people have asked me about someone who could give a virtual talk. And yeah, and your photos are absolutely, I mean, your books, the photos of the books are absolutely stunning. So,
well, thank you. And it's really fun, because they're all my plants. So,
yeah.
And you know, through Zoom, I can be right in your home. So let your garden clubs know.
Tova Martin, our guest. Thank you so much, Tova. I look forward to our next visit. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. Tova Martin, take a look at her website, too, tovamartin.com, and you're going to find out a whole lot more when you go there or to Instagram or Facebook. She's on Facebook, too. Well, Monday, we'll be talking with our friends from PBS Wisconsin about new resources for teaching about Wisconsin's First Nations. And then at 11:45, we learn about farm-to-school lessons, which focuses on Oneida Nation's three sisters. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.